What's up, folks? Welcome back to the Whoop Podcast, where we sit down with top athletes, researchers, scientists, and more to learn what the best in the world are doing to perform at their peak. I'm your host, Will Ahmed, founder and CEO of Whoop. We're on a mission to unlock human performance. Today, I am joined by a very successful real estate broker, one of the most successful in the world. You may have seen him on Bravo's Million Dollar Listing or read one of his best-selling books. If you haven't guessed it yet, my guest is real estate broker, CEO, and founder of Serhant, Ryan Serhant. Ryan is a longtime Whoop member and was declared CEO of the fastest growing brokerage by market share. He's here to discuss his insights on health and wellness, high performance, and his newly released book, Branded Like Serhant. Ryan and I discuss how Ryan got started with Million Dollar Listing. We dive into how he was filming four shows at once for multiple years, getting comfortable with the pressure, launching the Serhant brokerage and brand, his daily grind and work ethic, how to launch a brand and the learnings from his new book, and Ryan's dedication to health and fitness. If you have a question you want to see answered on the podcast, email us, podcast@whoop.com, call us 508-443-4952. And here is my conversation with real estate mogul Ryan Serhant. Ryan, welcome to the Whoop Podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm whooped to be here.
Well, I knew we were going to get along great because I realized that you've been wearing Whoop for a long time and you've got a new book out and you're on Million Dollar Listing, which we're going to talk about. So I'm excited for this.
You know, when I was like, the Whoop is actually super cool and I'll show you and we don't have to talk about you this entire time. On top of everything else it does, you know, I do a lot of speeches, right? Sales conferences everywhere. Sure. And so, I mean, this was years ago, the first time, but then I gave a speech to like 1,000 salespeople in Montreal, Canada yesterday. And then it grabs my stage performance.
Oh yeah, look at that.
Dude, I don't know if you can see it, if it's blurry.
I can. What is that, like a 15 strain or something or 10 strain for stage?
Dude, 11-3. My workout that morning was 8-1, but my stage performance was an 11-3. Granted, my stage performance was for a lot longer than my workout was because I went to bed at 1 a.m. the day before. But I am consistently in the yellow. Sometimes even the red, and then it stresses me out. I'm trying to get better.
What got you into Whoop in the first place?
I had a nutritionist / kind of personal trainer who was like, listen, it'll help me track. Like, just add me to your part of the community there. And she's like, then I'll just track. So you don't have to go and tell me that like this morning you had a light workout or the other day and everything. And then you guys introduced, now you can track like the actual workout and the weightlifting
trainer. Yeah. Stress monitor.
The strength trainer and all that stuff. Yeah. Sure. Yep. So it's to, I think like any personal trainer in the world should probably use it with their clients as just a way to track. That way it's not gut instinct, right?
Well, for sure. Look, incredibly grateful to have you, Whoop. We'll get back to your health and fitness journey. I want to start with your remarkable real estate career because you show up, if I've got this right, you show up for Million Dollar Listing as one of like 3,000 agents that's trying to get on this show. And you're about 1.5 years into real estate.
Yep.
And you've got an open casting. Like, just take me back to that moment. What were you thinking?
I was not thinking anything. I was thinking this is a potential big waste of my time. I'm not a top real estate agent by any means. I've barely been doing it. I was mostly doing rentals in New York City. I have no legitimacy for being in this room. But I'd rather regret the things I did than the things I never tried. It's the whole reason I moved to New York City in the first place, to try theater, to try acting, to see if I could do it. You know, I ran out of money in the summer of 2008, and my survival job was getting my real estate license because a friend told me to. And then when I started making money as a real estate agent, just on rentals, like helping people find rental apartments, doing their application processes, the credit, all that stuff. Then it was like, oh, you know what? It actually makes me happier to, if I'm going to work all day, every day and work for free, until I'm successful without a salary, no benefits, no nothing, then I might as well do it where I can increase my chances of success. And being a salesperson is a performance. Right? You know, there's no down days. Like, you can't be a successful salesperson on an off day. Like, no one buys anything from someone who's just upset, like, or off or turned off or not high energy.
Right.
So you got to be on all the time. And that's part of the training as an actor that I went, whether I was like studying at the Globe, the Shakespeare and, in London, or, doing regional theater and all the stuff that I did for so long. It all played into my budding real estate career. And so then I put that all to the side, got into real estate full time, started taking it seriously for like a year. And then the audition happened for the New York version of Million Dollar Listing New York. For Million Dollar Listing, the New York version. And I just went, and they saw 3,000 people at the Hudson Hotel in Times Square in March of 2010. And over the next 9 months, they slowly whittled it down. And then they cast four of us, and they said, only three of you will make the final show. Good luck. And then
that's pretty hardcore, then, by the way, just as like a production strategy. Hey, we're going to take 3,000 people. We're going to make them four. And then we're going to have the four compete for three spots. That's intense.
I mean, Bravo knows what they're doing, man. Yeah. Like they are, they're not that successful just by winging it or by taking, chances. So they know what they're doing. They know how to make things happen. And, it was a big moment. It was a big legitimizer for me. No one called me. Like, that show aired in 2012 for the first season. It's not like people pick up the phone and are like, hey, I saw you on TV last night. Can you help me buy my $20 million house? No, like that. No one calls anyone they see on TV ever. But it helped me open doors, especially with developers. Developers, new construction, because those people had an incentive to get their product on television.
Right.
And it would help them raise more money. It would be benefit. They don't care. They just want to sell. And so we really used it that way. And then we were nominated for two Emmy Awards. And 10 years later, it sunsetted when I started my own company. I couldn't be a real estate agent dancing around in a clown outfit with cupcakes anymore.
And did you find the process of being a real estate agent on television was mostly performative or consistent with like your actual day-to-day?
50-50. I mean, my actual day-to-day is I'm here at the desk and I'm like, if you just said, Ryan, go to work all day, I would be on the phone and on email all day long. Like, that's my work. I might have an appointment. I got to go meet a seller, go meet a buyer, go meet a developer, do a property tour. But other than that, like, everything's in email. Our whole lives are in our phones or in our computer screens here. I have three screens in front of me right now. And so that's what it would be. So the show becomes performative when it's like, well, no one wants to see you get an offer in email.
Right.
So if they're going to send you an offer and it's for a property that we're tracking on the show, you are going to tell them to call you and tell them to present it after 5 o'clock, because that's when we're going to be filming you with the seller. So like, that stuff was then performative, but they're all real listings, real deals, real everything.
Did you find yourself becoming a personality of yourself, or did you find the whole thing quite natural?
For me, it was kind of natural, maybe because I grew up performing.
Hmm.
So it was quite, I mean, I played myself as a real estate agent. Like, I think people meet me or they read my books or anything. And what people will say consistently is like, oh, you're just like you are on TV. I'm like, what were you expecting? They're like, I don't know. I've met other people on TV and they're funny on TV, but they're mean in real life. Or like, I don't have the time to try to be different people. Hey, it's too much going on. And we film these shows, man, they take a year. Like, they
it's
don't,
pretty wild.
We just shot it. I mean, so my new show comes out on Netflix in the next soonish. That show shot fast, and like, that was nuts. But Million Dollar Listing would take a year. Shoot for a year.
And so you had cameras with you how often?
For 9 years.
Right, but how often during the day?
Four days a week, Tuesday through Friday.
For how many hours?
On Tuesday morning, it could be 2 hours. Wednesday, it could be an hour. Thursday might be 6 hours. Fridays that would then be like the interview. You watch reality TV and you see someone sitting there talking.
Yeah.
And then I did four TV shows for Bravo. right? Wow. Million Dollar Listing New York. I did my wedding TV show. I did my renovation show. It was a renovating show. I did Sell It Like Sirhan, an entire season of that. That was a separate year, all filming all at the same time. Plus being a full-time real estate broker, plus all the, it's a lot. It's a lot. It takes time.
It's a hustle. I mean, you're also getting very comfortable behind camera in that process. Like, you must have realized quickly in that first season, okay, this is something I feel good doing.
Yeah, in the second season, I did. The first season, I'd never done anything like that before. Like, go be myself in front of a camera for a year. Plus, I'm new to this business. Like, how do I walk into a listing? Like, what are people going to pay attention to? Like, I didn't think anyone would care about the color of my hair. I'd never even thought about it. Turns out that being like 26 with gray hair was not necessarily normal. And people talked about it. It's like, it was like, oh, okay, I guess that's what people know me for. I think you play a heightened version of yourself. Richard Rubenstein, a big PR guy here in New York City, who's a publicist, friend of mine, then his best piece of advice was two things. One, he just said, when you're in front of a camera, no matter what, if you're going to do this, make the most out of it. If you're going to do it, win. Like, if you're going to play football, win. If you're going to go for a run, win. Like, if you're going to do it, go do it. Otherwise, don't do it. So if you're going to do this show and take on all the risks associated with them, one, go hard. Just go hard. If you think you're not going hard enough, you're definitely not going hard enough. So go harder, right? Push yourself. Think outside the box. Go hard. And two, remember, the person you are today is not the person you're going to be in 2 years when this show comes out, because they're going to film it for a year and then they're going to edit it and it'll come out 6-12 months later. And I had never thought about it that way. And he's, because, you know, he was a big PR guy, so he had other people on other shows and he was super aware. So he's like, just remember, just because you do $4,000 a month rentals and small sales now, and that's what they want to come show you, like living your life and what's your life like now, is that the kind of business you want to be doing in 2 years? It's like, well, no, I want to do better. I want to do bigger listings, bigger stuff. I want to grow. Like, so you have to grow by tomorrow at 10 a.m. because you got to go on camera showing the you that you want to be known for in 2 years, because that type of business is what people are going to call you on. So if you go and do a small little sale on TV today and it airs in 2 years, the world's going to see that and say, oh, that's the guy who does small sales. And that was the best advice he gave me. Also, by far the most stressful, like the most stressful. It's like telling somebody who like wants to run a mile in under 4 minutes, you know, being like, hey, you got to do that tomorrow, by the way, because yeah, we're going to show you doing it in 2 years. So just run real fast. Don't throw up. Like, it's just, I like lost weight during that season. It was just a lot. I didn't have a whoop back then. I don't think you existed.
Well, it certainly contributed to pulling forwards your success. It must've come with a fair amount of stress. Like, did you do anything along the way to get more comfortable under that pressure? Did you kind of get off to that pressure?
I think more than anything, man, it teaches you that like nothing's real, everything's possible. Hmm. Because I fast forwarded my career by 2 to 5 years in the span of 6 months. And all it took was really the fear of future brutal international embarrassment. Because what it forced me to do was I could go home at 5 because I have no more appointments in my calendar, or I could go meet up with a buddy and grab a beer, or maybe I'll go to the gym tonight or go on a date, but I couldn't. I had this reality TV shotgun to my head saying, you need to be number one or we're going to put you on international television as a failure. You decide. It's all on you. You control it. And so then you make that extra phone call. Like, you send that extra email. You put yourself in uncomfortable situations. And, you know, it's like the meme, right? It's like, that's where the magic is. It was brutal. It was brutal, but I still kind of do it that way today. Now it's all I know. It's like, all right, I'm going to go start my own company. It's going to be the greatest real estate company of all time. And we go big or we go home. So we might as well just go big.
And so
even though it's
and so you launched Serhant in 2020 in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Take me back to that moment.
I only do things at the worst times, Will. I got my real estate career started the day Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy. It was day one, right? They were filing for bankruptcy first thing in the morning. And I was like in the office trying to learn how to do a lease application. And it was the worst time and the best time because everybody got out of the business. Everybody was failing. And so that's the best time to learn, right? Because every idea you have is a fresh idea that's not negative. Same thing during COVID. Things were really, really tough, right? New York City, especially, the city was shut down, SWAT on the streets, like the riots, everything was complete insanity for a year, really. It was like New York City was closed from April of 2020 to April of 2021, really, before vaccine came out and it slowly started to open.
That's like a sequence of words that like I just hope will never be said again in our lifetime. Like New York City was closed. It's such
a for a year.
Such a horrible and dumb statement, you know?
Yeah. At the same time, though, it was definitely terrible. People lost their lives. It was insane, right? I would not be here today, would not have this company today, had it not been for COVID. And that's like a scary sentence to say, but it's true. Like, had I not had that time gifted to me, like we never would have done what we did. Like we would never have been able to start. And we also wouldn't have achieved the immediate success we did out of the gate because every other firm was pulling back, furloughing people, firing people, stopping growth, all that, obviously. Whereas for me, I was just getting started. Like I should not have had like a front page Wall Street Journal article written about the starting of my brokerage company. Like that wouldn't have happened in 2019 and it probably wouldn't happen today. Because so what? But in 2020, in September of 2020, it was more like, okay, Ryan Serhant, crazy person, makes big bet on real estate like a crazy person, especially in New York City, like a crazy person. But I also just knew that I'm pretty sure it's going to be okay. And we just grinded, man. None of us Netflixed and chilled. None of us quarantined. We all went to the office every single day and just dared someone to arrest us, you know, said hi to the police officers and the SWAT and just went and worked. Every building was completely empty, chairs on the floor everywhere. It was like, dude, New York was I Am Legend for a year. And I made a vlog running from 86 in Central Park West through Times Square down to the Battery. And only ever went by police. Just ran down the middle of the road from Central Park West all the way down. It was the craziest thing ever. And I told my guys, I'm like, listen, mask up. We got to go get this, get the drones, because we're never getting this time again. Like we must take advantage of this time. Dude, I could get from Tribeca to the Upper East Side in 7 minutes by car.
Yeah.
Now it's like 45 minutes.
Right.
It's just nutso. So it was a crazy time, but thank God I did it when we did it.
And how did you think about building a team out of the gates?
So I know I was a real estate agent from 2008 to 2020, and then I blew up my whole life. I had a team of 65 people in a lot of different markets. You know, in 2019, I don't know, we did like 1.2 billion in sales.
It's great.
You know, we were one of the largest sales teams ever in the United States anyway. And so I blew it all up and I left them all behind. I had no choice. It was the only way that I could do what I needed to do without going into details. And so I had to go by myself with two people. One person, her name is Jen Elise, who started the company with me, and she runs new construction for us. Actually just promoted her. And then our CFO, who I found because one of our biggest competitors, one of the big public companies, was just firing people left and right. And they were firing great people, right? And so I was starting my company and it was like, oh, wait, you don't, what happened to your non-compete? Like, oh, they're getting rid of all of them just so that we don't ask for severance. It's like, holy, COVID is the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm getting, like, imagine now. Dude, now I interview people and they're like, dude, we have non-solicits and non-competes for 2 years. In order to buy me out, it'd be this, that. This. Oh, my God. COVID, it's like, just, it's great for hiring. And then it became tough. And so we just grinded and we just built and tried to move as quickly as we possibly could.
What's up, folks? If you are enjoying this podcast or if you care about health, performance, fitness, you may really enjoy getting a Whoop. That's right. You can check out Whoop at whoop.com. It measures everything around sleep, recovery, strain, and you can now sign up for free for 30 days. So you'll literally get the high performance wearable in the mail for free. You get to try it for 30 days, see whether you want to be a member. And that is just at whoop.com. Back to the guests. I mean, I think a lot of people probably look at you and they're like, okay, this guy's been on TV. He's got all these like best-selling books. He does $3 billion in sales. Like, talk a little bit about the grind. Like, you've mentioned that a lot. You seem to have a very big work ethic. What's all the work that people don't see?
I mean, I work 7 days a week. I spend very little time with family. I wake up at 4:30 every day. I work out from, depending on the day, it's either 5 to 6 or 5:30 to 6:45/7 o'clock. I'm in the car and off to work at 7:30. I work until 7:30 or 10:30, depending on the day. I try to get in bed by around 11 to wake up at 4:30 the next day and do it all over again. I get somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 emails a day that are not spam. I have 3 assistants that help me with all of it. There's a significant amount of work and a significant amount of pressure. And it's not just one company. There's 3 of them. We have the brokerage, which is all things real estate, which is a massively full-time job in itself running that. Plus, I'm a full-time real estate broker, which most people don't have any time to do anything else, but I do that too. Plus, we run an education business, which is Sell It, where we have 22,000 members across 128 countries where we're doing sales training for the next generation. It's kind of and B2B and direct to consumer, which is a whole nother job in and of itself. And then I run a production company called Studios, which is a whole nother job in and of itself. Plus, just wrote the 3rd book. It took me 2 years to write that and did that for 4 to 5 hours every Saturday for 2 years. Plus, we have our podcast, plus all the content and the social across all platforms. You know, we're just over 6 million followers and subscribers across all platforms. And so we need to feed that beast all day, every day and make content and do property tours and all the things. Plus, I do speeches. I was in Montreal just last night, you know, giving a speech to 1,000 people. That's my stage performance there. And it's all a grind. It's all really tiring. I have a compressed L5 S1. I now have a standing desk that I'm standing at so I can go to walk. So I don't sit as much because I sit and just grind it out, going from my home office to my mobile office to my office and back. So now I need to, even though I thought I worked on my core a lot, apparently I didn't. So now I need to work on my core even when I'm standing and at the desk. And I manage costs and expenses and revenue and our P&Ls all day, every day while trying to push the machine forward. I don't know, man. That's the grind.
Well, I'm glad you gave that level of detail because I get messages from a lot of people who want to be entrepreneurs. I'm sure you get messages from thousands of people who want to be real estate agents or have their own company. And I think people don't actually appreciate how much of it is just really hard work and not being entitled to any of it.
It is a lot of work. It is a significant amount of work, but you have to be willing to push it forward. You know what I mean? Like you have to understand what your wall is. You have to understand what your win is. You have to understand what your why is. You have to be really, really clear with your goals. Like I could make less, work less, live somewhere else that's not New York City. Like, have a easier quality of life. I don't know. It's just not in my DNA. You have to understand the type of person you are more than anything. You have to understand truly what your core identity is. Like what makes you you? What are you? I think a lot of people just don't do that. You know, I that's why we teach it. That's why I wrote my book that just came out, you know, Brand It Like Sirhan. It's in part to help people understand what their core identity is so that they can understand what they should go build or not build.
Successful, limitless, polished.
That's me.
Those are the three words you use to describe yourself, right?
Yeah. And it can change. You know, when I was writing the book, like that's, you know, I think it was important to help people define me. Right. So you're reading this book and you understand who I am, so that I've done these exercises too, and I've done them with you. We have there's actually a fitness personal trainer that we track in the book that I track as she goes through all the exercises and the process, which I thought was super cool. So really trying to get the, you know, just not all real estate, not all sales, but really, okay, I'm a personal trainer and I'm looking to build a brand, do it on social, influence the world. And so, yeah, successful, limitless, polished. When I think about how I want to be known, at least now, right, that's what I focus on. And I think people need to find their adjectives, and that's a part of the book as well. It's a part of the work.
The book is Brand It Like Sirhan. It's your third book. I've got it here in front of me. I've been reading through it. And we were just talking about the notion of branding oneself with specific words. I mean, overall, I'm impressed with just how much you think about brand. It's not surprising, but it's something that I've thought a lot about in building a technology company. Why don't we just start with, what's the difference between a brand and a company in your mind?
Well, I think every company is a brand, whether it knows it or not. Right? A company is made up of the people, the product, and hopefully the profits. You know, not all companies, but I think the goal is eventually to get to a profit. The brand is the reputation, right? What is the math for a brand? If we really like pull it back, the brand is core identity of either the person or the product, right? And if it's a product, who's the character? What's the product's name? So for the Whoop, what if the Whoop was a human, and you've probably done this work too, like what is the name? What kind of TV do they watch? What would they be eating? What's their diet like? That character is your first target audience. That affects your target market, right? That's who you're going to buy ads against. That's who you're going to track, right? That's going to be that first audience that then you're going to grow out from there. For a person, right, for that personal brand, you're doing the work to understand what your and is. So I'm real estate and what? Right, that person over there is fitness and what? What is that niche? Right, that niche that you're going to attract yourself to and attract others to that you're passionate about. Maybe it's kids, maybe it's cats, maybe it's food, whatever it is, whatever makes you, whatever makes you happy, whatever that passion is that you have. Right, that creates passion commerce, and I think great brands build great companies. Right, and great companies build great brands. So that core identity. The minute it leaves your fingers as you're typing or your lips as you're talking as the CEO or just you yourself turns into the perception the world has of you. That perception, once you leave the room or leave the chat, or leave the social media platform, turns into reputation. It's how people talk about you and talk about your business behind your back. And then that reputation slowly but surely over time builds that brand, right? It's how people remember you. It's what that awareness is. I think individuals can build great personal brands. They don't have to necessarily be attached to companies or to businesses or to selling, obviously. I mean, there are influencers out there for better or for worse, right? There's people out there, there's big brands, there's tiny brands. But I think every person and every company has a brand, whether it's intentional or unintentional, right, is up to you. And if it's unintentional, then it's on you to kind of take that intention back and control the narrative.
What would be an example in your mind of a company that has an unintentional brand?
I don't know. I mean, I'm drinking my 5 o'clock protein shake right here, right? And so maybe this is a brand that, where I get this from, I don't want to call out this company, I'm sure it's fine. But like maybe it's the protein powder. You know, maybe it's their brand intentionally. They're trying to make super organic, you know, plant-based protein. But maybe it just doesn't taste great. And they're so focused on the ingredients, the compound, the logo, the look, getting you to buy it, that they forget about really the one reason why someone might buy a protein over the other isn't necessarily just the ingredients. It's if I'm going to replace food with a protein shake, it better taste good. So I want it to taste good. And if yours doesn't taste great because that was the last thing you thought about, then you built an unintentional brand. And the brand is, yeah, I think it's healthy, but it tastes like shit.
Well, it's interesting. Like, I work obviously in the technology space, and technology, I think, is often lacking of brand building. Yes, the products and the services have an identity, but what does it stand for? And I think a lot of technology companies have unintentional brands. Like, I even think about a company like Facebook. It's like, I would argue that their products and services are a lot better than their brand, right? And that's like, you know, an example of a company that's almost successful in spite of their brand.
Sure. Sure. I think media companies fall into that as well, right? I mean, they set out to tell the news, but if they tell the news only one way, right, then their brand, just like you said, is then
right
unintentional, right, in spite of itself. Right? And that's really, really hard to change unless you make a specific, like, concerted effort to go and change it. The biggest mistake I see people making, and, you know, the reason I wrote the book, it wasn't for huge brands to figure out how to brand it, but mostly for people trying to build from scratch. I'm going to build a company from scratch, a business from scratch. I have a following, build that from scratch, build my personal brand from scratch as a salesperson. You know, by 2027, the U.S. Department of Labor says that over 50% of U.S. taxpayers are going to fill out a 1099. Over 50%. Like, that's a lot of gig workers. That's a lot of people making a lot of money outside of a 9-to-5.
Right.
So those people are all selling something, whether it's a service, it's, you know, they're therapists, they're real estate agents, they're artists, and everything in between. The biggest mistake I see is that they just don't even start. Right? There's no starting. They start with the wrong things. They focus on the stuff they shouldn't focus on to start, which is the logo, the office, the things you can see, feel, and touch, instead of the foundation. You know, and a good analogy of that is in building a house, you know? Like, obviously that's right up my alley, but, like, so, you know, the amount of houses that I see that are beautiful on the outside but falling apart on the inside, it's only a matter of time before that house comes crumbling down. It's a house of cards, right? The foundation is cracked, but you have a nice marble kitchen. That's not a great deal, right? It's not a great house. So you've got to start with the foundation, which is that core identity, which is a lot of the early brand work, which is a big chunk of the book.
What would you say are the few sort of early checklist moves that someone in this gig economy could make to start building their brand?
So the first thing that I would do, let's say you're building a personal brand and not just a product brand. If you're trying to build a personal brand for yourself, is you find somebody, okay? You can do this on social too. You can just do a survey, but you could find somebody that you trust, but that doesn't love you, because love has a different level of trust, okay? And it's not always honest. So find someone you trust and ask them to describe you without using your name and see what they say. You know, take the best, leave the rest. Try to get the most honest response. You might not realize that you're the one who talks too loud. You might not realize that you're the one who walks with their eyes on the ground and doesn't make eye contact, which means that your personal brand and your first impression as you walk through every room as a potential salesperson is, "Hi, my name is Ryan Serhant and I'm insecure. How are you?" Right? Like, really try to do that work, because we don't think about it often. We all think we're great. Or the other side of the spectrum is we all think we're terrible. You know, we either talk ourselves up or we talk ourselves down, right? It's far harder to talk ourselves down the middle, right? To know that there are great things about us and there's also things that we're all working on. It's much, much easier to go far right or far left. And I would do that work and have that influence that initial core identity. part of our and what we teach and I go through is called our Sirhan brand strategy system, where we go through core identity, really figure out what that and is, who you are, and then we develop a content plan, right? It doesn't mean you have to go dance on TikTok, right? But it does mean that you have to be out there. Maybe your version of content is actual events. You do a monthly event or a monthly dinner. Maybe your version of content is LinkedIn thought leadership. Maybe your version of content is Twitter X, right? And that's where you're going to be, and you're going to post 10 times, whatever it might be. What's that consistent content that you're creating? And maybe it's ads for a product, right? We want to consistently be on I-95. That billboard, we got to have it. We want to consistently be in the commercials, out during Squawk Box. We got to have whatever that might be. What is that consistent content? Because great brands are consistent. They're also clear, concise, and memorable, right? Especially at the beginning. And then you take that consistency and turn it into wins. And then the third phase, when you're building your personal brand or even a product brand, is shouting it from the mountaintops, is amplification. So how do you make sure that success begets success? How do you make sure that people are aware of your wins so that they know your wins are out there? Because those wins are going to enable other people to want to win with you, right? And then those wins, those successes are attractive. Like, I wear the Whoop not because someone said, oh, it doesn't work, right? I wear it because people said, oh, no, it works. You got to try it. Oh, okay. I guess I will. Success begets success. And then round and round and round you go.
What's been other perceptions of the Whoop brand?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't asked a lot of people. I'm sure you focus on it a lot more than I do. You know what's interesting? I think a lot of people know it, but if they don't have it, they don't know what the app looks like.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's a lot about this. And so anytime I post, I don't know, if my strain is really down or stage performance or anything, like I'll screenshot the you know, that main page and you can post it. And the amount of comments I get from people like, what is that? Where can I get that? What is that thing? And having to explain it, you know, I don't know. I'm sure people look at it as a, you know, like a, you know, a fitness tracker, but don't necessarily truly understand the technology around it or behind it, unless they follow you on Instagram and know that you took down Amazon. And maybe they
That's
do.
Right. I appreciate that reference. Thank you for that.
Great. A great post.
Yeah. Well, you know, they came after us.
I know. I saw. Totally awesome. And I do every now and then I don't want to break it, but I do want to open it to see that thing that you write on the inside. But I don't want to have to get a new one.
Ryan's referring to the don't bother copying us, we will win circuit board, which lives inside every Whoop 4.0, which is a pretty good story. So, you know, you're clearly into health and fitness. It sounds like you're getting 6 hours of sleep a night?
Yeah, for now. I mean, tonight I'll sleep more.
Okay.
Saturday night I'll sleep more.
So maybe seven I know that or that eight?
Doesn't... Yeah, I'll try. Like over New Year's, there's one night I think our daughter, you know, she's four. She slept like 12 hours. We slept like 11.
So that's catching up on your sleep debt.
Yeah, makes me feel better. Yeah, I'll sleep, you know, I try to sleep six. Anything below six is... It's you definitely feel it right the next day. Like I had to give this speech yesterday on 5 hours of sleep. And that's hard, man. Like that is like you feel, especially as you get older, like you know, you feel it.
I also find that you're like, especially for a stage performance like that, you're a little bit more, at least I am, like a little bit more jittery. Like if I've gotten my 7 hours, you know, if I've gotten over 3 hours of restorative sleep, I just feel very calm under the public speaking environment.
Yeah, your body's operating at maximum performance that way, right? You know, it's interesting as you talk about age. Like, I think a lot this year about sacrifice. You know, you talk about my schedule and my calendar and, you know, what we all sacrifice to achieve our goals. And is it actually worth it? Mm. And I feel like when you're younger, like how old are you now?
I'm 34.
Yeah. So I feel like up until you're 35, we measure our life by our wins. And then something happens when you turn 35, I'm 39 now, where you know, you still want to win. It never goes away. You still want to have successes. You want to make more. You want to build more. But you start to measure your life by your losses. Like, I don't think so much about the deals I've won now as much as I think about the deals I've lost. Like, I don't think so much about the trip that I took to Canada and did that really, really cool thing. And that's a notch on my belt. I think about the time I lost with my daughter, you know, like, and it's interesting as that changes. And I think life is like a full glass of water, you know, like ice water, and the winds are the ice, you know? And it's like, how do you balance that glass so that you can live at peak fullness at all times? If I just focus on the winds, which are the ice, then I got to take the ice out. And then I got a lot of emptiness in there. It's a lot of loss. If I just focus on the journey and don't care about my wins, then I got to take all the ice out and throw it away. And then there's still a lot of emptiness in there, right? There's still a lot of loss. And it's just been something I've been thinking about in 2024. Definitely getting older here, Will.
Well, you seem like someone who's definitely on the dopamine cycle of the next, you know, the next deal, the next close, the next thing. It'd be hard to be answering 1,000 emails a day otherwise.
Yeah, you have to. But I'm also like a product of my environment. Like, I remember, like, I was not always this way. Like, I remember I was in real estate for like a year. So I got into it September 2008. So then Thanksgiving 2009. Been in it for a year, was in it, doing, like, you know, small rentals, but I was losing them too. You know, and I started to be an actor my whole life. I was an introvert, quiet, you know, kind of kid. And I remember going home and then at dinner, my dad asking me, so like, what, you know, Ryan, what have you been up to? And I just started talking. And then before I know it, I'm looking around the whole table, my family, my two brothers, everyone's just staring at me. I was like, what? My little brother goes, dude, you talk so fast now. It's like, what do you mean? I don't talk fast. You talk slow, dude. Why don't you talk a little bit faster? I don't have the fucking time to have this conversation with you people. Like, it was just, and they were like, man, dude, New York has changed you. And I was like, I don't know if New York changed me as much as like being a New York City real estate broker changed me. And every single minute counts. Like, I don't know. That was a core memory of mine. It's like, maybe I should slow down just a little bit.
Do you do anything to, I mean, it sounds like you exercise every day. Do you do anything like meditate or breathing stuff?
No.
Or are you a big coffee guy?
No, I drink one cup of coffee on Saturdays. I don't want to, I try to limit my addictions, you know? And so I just drink my big thing of electrolytes for a long, long time. And
that keeps
you. I feel like when I fill my stomach with water, it kind of does the same thing, you know, at least I've convinced myself of that anyway. And, you know, working out is kind of my meditation, right?
Yeah, that works.
It's music. I can't talk. I don't talk to anybody. I just do my thing, move forward. You know, you're counting a lot. When you lift, you count.
You're present.
It's a lot of count.
Present.
Yeah. You're counting, you're keeping track of time, you're breathing, you're watching your breathing, you're flexing, you're bracing your core and your back. So it's like, then I go and sit there for half an hour and meditate. I'm like, it's kind of the same thing, just way more boring with no potential benefits other than my mind might be in a clearer headspace after, but like my mind's pretty clear and I have my best ideas while I'm working out anyway. Keep my phone by me, quickly jot down notes. If I'm with my personal trainer, I don't have my phone. And if I look at my personal trainer text message chain, it's all him texting me random things where I'm like, hey, can you text me 99 times 2 p.m. I'll know what it means. So it's just like this whole list of just to-do list items, because it's like that's when it pops up. Same thing, that's why we all have thoughts in the shower, because like that's when you actually have to stop. You're not looking at a screen, you're not watching a thing, you're not talking to anybody else. You're in the shower and you're just focused on, okay, hair now, body. Oh shit, what about that thing at 7? Like your brain actually starts to say, okay, here's all these things that we didn't think about today because you were just too distracted by everything else.
I get it. I think, I mean, for me, meditating's been very powerful. I started doing it like when I was maybe about 25, and I was struggling with managing the company and like the weight of, you know, having people and investors that you're responsible to and not feeling comfortable with that. I think before and after meditation, like life before versus life after. Like both versions of myself were good at your like day-to-day tasks and just like go, 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 go. But the meditated version became much more comfortable with leadership and stress. And look, it's not for everyone. It's a hard thing to push on people. But for people listening to this, who are like, should I try it or not? There's two sides to it.
Well, you're a hardware and a software and a motivation business, right? You, you know, are a disruptor. I mean, you guys get classified as a lot of different things, not just one thing, right? So you gotta wear a lot of different hats, right, all the time. And then how do you build upon that? How much time do you spend thinking about the hardware, the product, the software, ARR, like the next quarter versus last quarter? Like what do you spend your time stressing about, thinking about, iterating on?
A lot of what I spend my time on is thinking about the next versions of the product. And that could be what we're releasing from a software standpoint in the next 2 weeks or 2 days. That could also be looking at very futuristic generations of the hardware. So I would say that's where my gravitational pull is, but there's also a massive responsibility around hiring and, you know, working with your leadership team and managing.
How many employees are it?
And budget and this and that.
All right, what now?
We're like 550, something in that neighborhood.
Jesus. Yeah. On payroll?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you look at that like every week? Do you get that breakdown? You're like, oh my God, that's a lot.
It's a lot of people. But I'm more focused, I would say, on the overall output of the company versus the question of costs. I mean, they're deeply related, and obviously you can't get over your skis. But when you feel like you've got control of growth, everything else follows. When you feel like you have control of innovation, everything else follows.
What is the aligned mission for those 550 people? Like, what are they gonna hoot and holler at the end of the year? Like, what's that? How do you keep that many people aligned on a singular mission?
Well, our mission's to unlock human performance, and the deeper meaning behind that is we want to improve health and fitness for millions of people, and we look at that across verticals of growth, which is getting more people on Whoop, retention, which is keeping them on Whoop, and then operational excellence, which is how our business is successful and profitable and healthy. And that's kind of the pyramid that everything marches from. And then you can look at a bunch of different OKRs throughout growth and retention and operational excellence. And hopefully every single person within this building knows how the work they're doing is pointed at a few of those different OKRs or one in, you know, very specific one.
Yeah. Got it.
So
super cool.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Big fan over here. I appreciate you letting me ask you those
questions. Yeah. Well, grateful to have you on Whoop. The book is Brand It Like Serhant, and it is officially out as of when?
Last Tuesday.
Okay. So it's fresh out. And you can find it where books are sold. Where can folks find you, Ryan?
At Ryan Serhant everywhere.
Easy to find. Very popular on social media. Any closing thoughts for us, Ryan?
No, I'm glad that Monik, our lovely squash player, connected us in the first place.
Monik's the best.
Yeah. No, man, this has been a super, super great time. I really appreciate you.
Likewise, look forward to meeting in person soon, and congrats on everything and congrats on the book.
Thanks, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Big thanks to Ryan for joining me this week. Great to hear about his health and wellness journey and check out his new book, Brand It Like Serhant. If you enjoyed this episode of the Whoop Podcast, please leave a rating or review. Check us out on social at Whoop, at Will Ahmed. If you have a question you want to see answered on the podcast, email us, podcast@whoop.com. Call us 508-443-4952. If you're thinking about joining Whoop, you can visit our website to sign up for a 30-day free trial membership. And new members can use the code WILL, W-I-L-L, to get a $60 credit on Whoop accessories. That's a wrap, folks. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next week on the Whoop Podcast. As always, stay healthy and stay in the green.